Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Creator's Playbook. I'm Michael.
I'm Steven.
And today we're learning about how not to kill yourself in space.
Oh, okay. That was a little bit of a change than what I was expecting. I'm pretty sure there's a lot less ways to not kill yourself than there are ways to kill yourself in space.
Yep. With all the things floating around up there, it's actually becoming more and more of a problem. And there is a company that happens to be littering space with a lot of little shiny internet nodes.
So, really?
Yeah. You know, as an astrophotographer, it's becoming more annoying. But I can still respect technology. So that's another story. And
well, I'm trying to decide, though. Like, garbage in the oceans or garbage in space? Which,
Garbage in space. Well, okay. You have to add up all of the carbon and pollution that was emitted to get the garbage in space. And by garbage, I mean satellites.
Okay, so it does expend a lot more energy to do that. Yeah. So, okay, let's probably not do that.
But we eat things from the ocean. So garbage in water is not cool.
It's just a problem. But I don't think that's what our episode is on necessarily. So no. Let's go ahead and get into it then, huh?
Sorry. Woo. Yeah. Cue the music.
Cue that music.
Music time.
Oh, yeah. So today, actually, the topic is about robots.
Okay, that's what I was expecting.
Sorry. But robots in space is a good way to die, if there is ever one.
I'm pretty sure that robots on Earth would probably be a great way to die, too. Have you seen some of those videos of, like, the robots that, like, walk like canines, like, on all fours, and they can open up door handles, and then, you know, you can't push them over? Like,
the first time I saw those robots, I was like, that's got to be CG. Those can't be
They're
real.
They're so cool.
Are they real? I've not seen one in my life. They're real.
Oh, yeah, they're real. Anyways, they just released like a whole music video of like the robots dancing to the music.
Yeah.
Ty and I watched it and we had a great time. I laughed a couple of times just because of how incredible.
I think it's Boston Dynamics with a partnership with MIT.
Okay. Have you seen that video where like the one that I was just talking about where they're dancing?
I haven't, no. Dancing robots. Is it on YouTube?
Yeah, they're just the cutest things in the whole world. So if you look up Do You Love Me, that's the official video.
See, the thing that trips me up, he's just mechanical, and it just looks like, I mean, obviously, he's mechanical. He's a robot.
Did you realize, though, how you gendered it? It's just like, oh, they're all guys. They're cool.
Yeah, I did. I gendered it. But I think that's because anything that's humanoid-shaped, we want to personify in a humanoid way.
And that, it's and that totally brings me, like a result of English as well. Like, that's how we refer to things.
So... And I think that brings me to one of the first points I wanted to make is that when can I go to Boston Dynamics and work for them? I'd hate to be the programmer on this, though.
I'm pretty sure that it's probably animated the same way as you would like a 3D character.
Oh, like inverse kinematics?
Yeah. And then you probably just like upload.
Yeah, but that inverse kinematics is not a lightweight calculation.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, okay, so there's a lot of a complex mechanics going on here. It's got a calculated center of mass. It's got to make sure that it's balancing. I mean, like, those are all things we do instinctively as a human. Mm-hmm. But programming that into a robot has got to be a challenge, right?
Yeah, and my mind doesn't think that way.
I was watching, I watched this really creepy video of an AI lab doing work for Miyazaki. And they developed zombies, zombie movement. And they're like, yeah, this could save us work. And Miyazaki's like, that was disturbing. Because like the AI learned how to walk on its head and drag the body along. And it was very creepy. It was
okay.
It was very creepy. And Miyazaki's like, I don't want to ever see this again. Why are we doing this? And I could see the software engineers are like, really ashamed that they created such a fiendish thing. And Miyazaki was very, very forceful about how he I think it was like, okay, Miyazaki's very fanciful and he creates some ugly looking like
There are some enemies, things that are in those movies, right? Where I'm just like, where did that come from?
Right? So you have to take in mind that Miyazaki has created some very fanciful, ugly looking monsters. And he was horrified by these zombies that AI taught how to walk.
But oh, I love the videos. There is one where it was teaching AI how to walk. Mm-hmm. And it's just like a side by side. It was a computer generated and it was just a humanoid rig. And all the rig knew was that it had to move forward. And so it was like flailing its arms around until it like learned how to like grip and like walk forward. Oh, it was so cool.
Yeah.
But also the implications. Mm.
I think it introduces a couple of things like what is a robot? Maybe getting back to our point, what is a robot? And the textbook definition in the encyclopedia is a machine capable of carrying out a complex series of actions automatically. Especially one programmable by a computer.
Okay.
So when I brought up the AI stuff, because a lot of times like programming a robot to do things is actually a complex time consuming task. And if you could teach an AI program how to do those things, translating that to an actual robot becomes a lot simpler. The problem with AI is that it's very creative in how it does things.
It doesn't think with limitations.
No, anything that satisfies the goal,
the objective,
gets rewarded. And so if walking on your head helps you accomplish that goal, well, that you've ended up with a robot that is very particular. So kind of doing a little bit of history study in this, I think it was 1920s was the first mention of robot, and it was in a play. It was a Czech play. The term is Slavic in root. And it's associated with labor. So I think for me, and I think that really brings it out, like the first introduction of robots came with the idea of accomplishing labor. And so when I think of a computer that does computations, that's not performing labor. But when I think of a computer that is doing mechanical work, like an excavator arm, right? Or an exoskeleton suit that maybe a military guy is wearing, or an air, you know, you can think of a giant airplane as a robot that is being controlled by a human. Like the F-22 Raptors, the airplane employed by the United States Air Force. I was watching a few videos on those airplanes and the pilots are like, I don't even have to do a lot of the thinking. I just tell the aircraft to do something and it does it. Like, you know, by engaging the landing gear, the airplane realizes, oh, he's going in for a landing, and automatically adjusts the flaps and automatically does a whole bunch of things that it takes a load off of the human pilot, and the human pilot can focus on landing as opposed to controlling all of the air surfaces.
Like, I guess to that regard, flying an airplane becomes a lot more like playing a video game where you hop in and the only thing that you really do is tell the airplane where to go and how fast. Right. And it does it by itself. Like it's kind of that same kind of concept.
Exactly. And I think that when we extend that sort of AI, there's a lot of AI being used in that aircraft, and we extend it towards space travel and space flight where, hey, I want to get to Mars. You click on the map, like Google Maps, or it's Google Solar System now, whatever. And and it says, all right, charting you a course to Mars. When would you like to arrive? And like it calculates all the thrust vectoring. You don't have to do it. I played Kerbal Space Program. That could take hours. Anyway.
To calculate the path?
Yeah, to calculate the path, because it's very like going from one celestial body to another. There's a lot of intermediate burns that you have to do. And a lot of times you just kind of wing it, like, I am not actually aiming for any particular spot. And you just like, okay, if I burn this way for this long at this point of time, it's going to get me there. And you can set up maneuver nodes and such. But I can imagine an AI helping you do that and then actually accomplishing it too as part of the robot aspect of it. So robots. Robots are mechanical devices that accomplishes something for you.
So I just want to ask you then, with that definition, how do you think that robots play into storytelling?
I'm glad you asked, because that's where I was going to go.
Oh, wonderful.
A lot of the time I think about storytelling and robots. Robots have become a character in and of themselves, as opposed to a tool. And so
especially the humanoid robots.
Especially the humanoid robots, right? Where they have their own personality. They are, in essence, an artificial life form at this point. You know, a very famous one would be something like C-3PO.
Exactly. Right? Yeah, C-3PO, R2-D2, now BB-8.
Now BB-8. When you think about that line of storytelling, the robots are characters in the story. Mm-hmm. Right? The fact that they're a robot is actually ancillary. They could have been Andorian or something like that. They could have just been another species. But I like to kind of think about more when I want to put a robot into a story. I think we could use it as a to try and make a point or talk about humanity from another point of view.
Well, wasn't there Johnny Five?
Yeah, I was actually going to start.
Johnny Five is alive.
Coming back to it, like Short Circuit, the movie where you can express humanity through someone, a machine who is learning humanity to start with. And that's where Johnny Five comes in, or I don't know where Johnny comes from, but robot number five in Short Circuit, where a lightning bolt hits and he gains awareness. He was this robot designed to fight in a military as an assistance or as a person replacement robot to fight war. Hmm. And the robot gains sentient and starts to learn and develop a mind of its own. And I think in that
story, there were several of those too, right?
There were,
right?
Yeah, like Short Circuit movies. And Short Circuit 2. Mm-hmm. And I think there was
robot's
a third.
Name, though, he named himself Johnny. I just looked it up.
He did.
So his character's name is Johnny Five.
Right. And his favorite thing was like, input, need input. In these cases, you can experience humanity through the eyes of the robot. Mm-hmm. The robot, a great example with Johnny Five is that he sees a butterfly for the first time and he mimics his eyebrows to match the butterfly wings. Mm-hmm. And you're like, you see that they were trying to express that Johnny Five is a child here in his understanding. He understands very little and he's mimicking. Right. He's learning by mimicking and trying to understand what this creature is. And in the end, he learns that he can be killed. And now he is self-aware to the point that he fears for his own life.
So just mortality being aware awareness. Of your own mortality.
Yeah, I think that's more in line with what I was going for. So a robot or an artificial intelligence that comes alive to the point where it realizes that it can at some point die. Mm-hmm. And now has self-preservation as part of its dictates that I've got to self-preserve, which is where reproduction,
I've got to survive.
Right? Animals reproduce to carry that on their genes. But what do robots do? So I think you can use robots to try and express parts of humanity in a more simpler way. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, robots that are starting to understand something, you can take it from a childlike point of view. If you want to explore the topics of what does it mean to be alive? Mm-hmm. You can use a robot who is just learning to live and experience things as a way of expressing that in your stories.
Mm-hmm. Which I think Alita Battle Angel would probably be a good example of that.
Yeah, that's great.
I think another thing that's really fun with the concept of robots is, like you said, they are, especially robots that communicate, they are another character. So you can think of them like another character. However, they have different rules that you can play with. You know, a robot can fall apart or be disassembled. A robot can have its programming changed. So a character that has different rules that they play by, therefore allowing you to explore different elements of storytelling.
Right. And another great example of that is Wall-E, who does in the story Wall-E, the movie Wall-E, where Wall-E, spoilers in all of these, Wall-E gets destroyed, you know, parts of himself get destroyed, and just replacing those parts didn't bring back a software that was running on him that gave him his personality.
But, you know, on that same line, you know, you look at something like Big Hero 6, where the robot character is actually used as a reminder of their creator. And so the artist's painting being left behind is a remnant of who they were, and then being able to connect with the past.
Through their creation.
Mm-hmm. But a creation that can respond to you.
Yeah, and I think that's what's interesting or neat about robots is that they're interactive. They can interact with your story and do unexpected things that your characters now have to deal with.
Right, and they also have a purpose. Like, robots are not built to be robots. They're built to do something.
Right.
You know, you look at going back to Star Wars as an example, like, C-3PO is a communication droid. Like, his responsibility is to be a diplomat, whereas R2-D2 is a utility droid. R2-D2 repairs.
And he's an astrometric droid, so he flies spaceships too. I think the epitome, though, of robots are androids, which takes robots to the next level. They're like general purpose robots that can replace humans. Right. Or work alongside humans.
So you're talking
humans.
Like Data from Star Trek.
Exactly. Like Data. And I think Data's purpose is to explore humanity. Like, what does it mean to be alive? What does it mean to be a person? and to explore morality. Where it's interesting because, okay, Data's fatal flaw is that he has no empathy or emotion, mm-hmm. right? And you see the writers wanted to express the opposite with Lore, Data's brother, who has empathy and emotions. And he, you know, Lore turned out evil and realized he could conquer the universe and wanted to conquer the universe, whereas Data wanted to assimilate with humans and become more human through his quest. So I think you can use these aspects of giving a robot life and then giving him certain aspects and maybe disallowing other aspects and playing with the thoughts of how that robot mm-hmm. develops to showcase different aspects of the what if or wish fulfillment in that mm-hmm. regard.
And it's kind of cool because you can also take the opposite direction. If an android is greater than a robot, then if you're to become less than a robot, you're looking more of like an automaton, which yeah. is pretty much an animated puppet, which is very right. specific on what it does. You don't customize that a lot. It's more artwork. And once mm-hmm. it's completed, it serves a single purpose.
Right. So like a cuckoo clock, the bird in a cuckoo clock is an automaton mm-hmm. whose sole purpose is just to announce the hour and do so in a catchy way.
Mm-hmm. Or all the characters at Disney rides that come yeah. out and like do their single movement and they go back in again. Like they're all automatons.
Right. So I think, you know, robots are kind of this middle ground where they're programmable. They can do things. They can express themselves in interesting ways. Mm-hmm. And as you go up the scale to more humanoid likes, you get more to androids. And it's interesting when an android uses robots to accomplish tasks. Think about that one for a second.
Okay. I like that concept. It definitely makes you think of, like, there's a level of hierarchy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and at what point do you need to consider ethics and morality in this whole chain of robots and such? In that original 1920s story that we got the word robot from, the author there tried to explore labor and like forced labor, I believe, between humans and robots. I could be horribly wrong. Please don't scold me on this one because I didn't read the book. But when you start taking away humanity's work and work ethic, what are you left with humans when robots do all the work?
Mm-hmm.
And is it okay to have robots doing the slave labor? Especially robots maybe that can have a more artificial intelligence and can start to think for themselves. We're not talking about automatons that only perform one task. And we're not talking about androids that are fully sentient or, mm-hmm. you know, like these middle ground robots where they're a second class citizen. And maybe your story starts off with a robot where he is non-sentient. He's performing a task and he's somewhat humanoid because he needs articulating arms to accomplish his tasks. And he starts to expand his programming, trying to accomplish, you know, new things that is there, the controllers are trying to introduce and such. So at what point do you say, hey, this isn't a robot anymore. This is a life, and the life deserves rights and freedoms mm-hmm. to act according to its dictates or will, you know? And then at what point does that robot then seek justice on society for controlling them, cleaning up all the nuclear waste that we created from our power plants or whatever yeah. it may be? You know?
Yeah, and there's a lot of implications there. And I think about this, and I actually was thinking about this as you were chatting earlier in the episode, of why are we as humans so afraid of losing control? Because a lot of these stories that we deal with are, you know, we've established ourselves on this planet as the dominant life form. We're terrified of things like AI and robots, even though we're still developing and making them and making them better
and faster.
Suddenly the whole concept of at what point, you know, do we feel like we don't have control anymore, and why is that horrifying as a people in society?
Yeah, I mean, with artificial intelligence, they're saying we've got 5 to 10 years before we hit the singularity snap or trap, right, where artificial intelligence becomes sentient. We're on the cusp of general AI at this point, where AI can more or less think for itself and optimize the problems you're having it solve. The singularity snap is just the next step. Mm-hmm. And at what point does the artificial intelligence become sentient? And does it become sentient and beneficial, or sentient and Twitter? sorry, you know, where it's just the cesspool of humanity in one machine, or mm-hmm. or does it is it not really thinking, and it says, hey, I need to make paper clips. And you know what? Humans make really good paper clips, and just destroys humanity because it's trying to optimize the problem we gave it to solve.
Right. So, and for some reason, making the ultimate paperclip in the optimum way means that you're going to be creating a ton of waste, and you're also destroying land. And oh, but that doesn't matter because your job is to make the paperclip.
Right. So I think as we get closer and closer, these questions become way more pertinent. And we've been asking these questions for hundreds of years. You know, going back in time, a synonym of robot is golem. And golems were little clay statues that were given life, right, in these folklore stories. I mean, so the idea of some machine that tries to accomplish some task has been in our consciousness for hundreds of years, if not thousands of years.
Well, and the great thing about the concept of golems, kind of like what we're facing right now, is that most stories that involve a golem, if I remember correctly, I haven't looked into this in preparation for this episode, but those stories never ended well. Like, there was always some type of punishment for skipping the process, you know, skipping everything that you need to complete a task and have something else do it. Like, you paid the price for it.
You know, and all of this talk of robots and skipping tasks just makes me think about my own humanity and my own life and such. And, I mean, what is life but neural electrical activity in fleshy brain electronics?
We're organic robots.
We're organic robots.
And we run off of chemistry. Everything that's like that happens is chemistry.
So we're chemical robots at the end of the day. What does that mean for our own humanity and our own storytelling as we think about it? And physics is also coming to the conclusion. I mean, we're not there yet. We're like on the cusps of declaring this possible, right? That life is a simulation.
That's my favorite subject.
And it's one of those things where like, are we chemical robots in some random person's simulation or hologram? I don't know. And I think all of these stories maybe give us a little comfort realizing that we're helping us realize that we're maybe a little bit more than what we think we are.
We're creators.
Yeah. And I think that's what's so fun about storytelling in the end is that you can create whole worlds, whole universes, and play within them and have fun, right? So it's a simulation within a simulation. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce our story. Our story follows, actually our story is very short. It's just an intro.
Oh, cool.
To try and kick things off. So the name of the robot is Terrestrial Orbital Debris Incendiary Bot. Toby Bot.
Toby Bot. Okay, I was going to say, please tell me there's an acronym.
There is. And I had a hard time coming up with that acronym. I had the acronym in Toby. Toby, T-O-B-Y, but I had a hard time kind of backronyming it. That's what I came up with. Terrestrial Orbital Debris Incendiary Robot, Toby Bots. So picture as you will in space, on a space station floating high above the Earth. Callie grabbed the support handle next to the control panel. Just another day on trash duty, Callie grumbled. Come to space, they said. See the world, they said. Bah! Callie peeked through the surface port window to get a glimpse of Earth 250 miles below. She floated there for a second, transfixed on the view. A cyclone was developing off the coast of Florida. Everything was still, and the only sound she heard was the life support fans running, filtering out the excess carbon dioxide in the air. A light started flashing on the console next to Callie's hand. She didn't notice. A few minutes later, a beeping sound. Oh, right. I've got to complete the launch sequence for the Toby Bots. Space junk was becoming a problem.
Okay.
So that's our story. And
space junk is becoming a problem. Have we deployed Toby Bots on Earth?
Not yet. Well, you mean in this story?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of like a Wall-E, right? Where you've got, you know, on Earth, you know, they've been trying to clean up the last 10,000 years of humanity trashing the planet, and they finally got a handle on it, and they've created robots to help clean up and beautify the planet. And they're trying to do the same thing to space because they lost access to space generally because of all the space junk. And now
you
they're
just
trying
to fly out.
Yeah, you just can't fly out very easily. So actually, Callie's been up in space for a while, a few years, and she's having to scavenge. So the thoughts I had when developing the story is Callie's part of a cleanup crew, but they also need to scavenge old space junk to get the needed supplies to continue living up in space. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of like that last, not the last frontier, but they're the last bastion. If they don't succeed in their mission, space becomes inaccessible and they'll have to do more drastic things.
Yeah. And it kind of makes me wonder because, like you said, there is a lot of debris, but we are constantly putting even more stuff up there. How many space launches actually occur? Because the amount of satellites that are in space are astronomical.
You said that right. Astronomical. I don't know exactly, but I want to say it's dozens, if not a hundred a year.
Really?
I've got a NASA launch schedule. 2021 is going to be a big year in space. I wonder why. Well, okay, we had the rover on Mars. So not only do we junk our own planet, but we're really good at junking other planets too.
We're getting started. Don't count us out yet. We'll definitely make your planet a paradise.
That's okay. We like making robots that fly in space. Like robots.
Like
I mean,
Toby.
Like all of the NASA probes are great examples of robots. Like
they're
the little,
cool. They're the so little, cool.
Helicopter that we successfully flew on Mars a few weeks ago.
If you haven't yet, audience, I highly recommend looking up like space debris and just looking through Google Images. There's cool pictures of the junk that floats around Earth. It's wild. Okay, so what's our character's name again?
Callie's the girl, and Toadie are the little robots that she uses to help collect the trash.
Okay, so we got Callie, and she is up there in space with the Toadie box. Toadie, I like Toby better. I'm sorry,
I do, but I couldn't come up with another word for debris that starts with a B.
Unless it's debris, and they're taking the B from
you know, I could buy that Toby bots.
Toby bots.
Terrestrial orbital debris incendiary bots. Toby bots.
So this is a cool sketch. She's out there. She has a fleet of these Toby bots, and she's about to launch them. Are we trying to explore something? Because I think what we're looking at is a fleet of robots that probably work both individually as well as a swarm.
Collectively, like a swarm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, to tear apart the larger machines, they work together. They can join together. Mm-hmm. I want to say there's probably hundreds of them. And as she scraps more, she has the ability to manufacture new bots.
So the real question is then, how are they being controlled? Does she have any amount of control? Is she the pilot of the Toby bots? Because that would be cool if she could kind of sit there floating in space and like reach her hand out at debris and have the bots fly out. Kind of like drones up in the sky. Yeah. And they just kind of like fly out and like they can grab things and she can like visually
her space suit,
pull them apart.
She has to wear a spacesuit, right? And her spacesuit actually has sensors in it to match her movement. Mm-hmm. And the Toby bots can swarm together and mimic her movements. What she's focusing on with her eyes, the computer
the AI
can see.
Fills in.
Right, fills in the blanks and like, oh, okay, she's looking at this and now she's reaching it and pulling it apart to section it in half and the Toby bots fly in with their thrusters and work at it with their drills to separate it in half and pull it apart and find the raw resources with their sensors. So yeah, I see this as a very complex swarm intelligence where each bot on its own doesn't... can contain somewhat of a like, oh, I need to go here. I mean, like the command is to move here.
It's a lot
the robot,
more like a relay.
Yeah, the robot looks at its neighboring robots and says, oh, okay, I fit in this way. And like as a bot gets damaged or destroyed, it can pull itself out to get repaired and such. So there's a lot of artificial intelligence is working.
Well, and they're obviously communicating with each other.
Exactly.
And communicating in a way that's beyond Callie. So the real question is what happens then when they lock onto something that's not debris and Callie's trying to stop it, but all of her motions are making it worse. Like, could that be a thing? Like, does she accidentally tear apart her own spaceship and she can't get back to Earth?
No, I wouldn't necessarily go that far, but I do like the idea of maybe she was trying to intercept there was a supply shuttle that was sent or a supply rocket, an unmanned supply rocket that was sent, but it unfortunately hit some debris and was become disabled and it has water and other essential ingredients in some new 3D printers or molecular printers that allows her to print these bots faster. And so she wants to retrieve it. And she gets out there with her swarm and starts to retrieve it. But accidentally, as she keeps, like, it's wedged into like a clump of other space debris from, you know, 100 years ago. Maybe there's a war in space. And so there's space junk all over the place. Right. It's lodged in, the sensors were damaged. And so it kind of fired its rockets unwittingly and lodged itself in even more. And as Callie's trying to peel the two spaceships apart, she's doing more and more damage to her critical resources. And I could totally see her like trying to turn the system off, but the system's like, oh, wait, like it realizes the payload of this thing has the resources it needs to make more of itself. And
it has its kind of preservation built in that extent that it can override.
Well, I don't know. I mean, like, it's our story. We can do whatever we want. But maybe
I'm just saying, like, it's, who would build that kind of system?
Well, maybe it's looking for raw resources, right, that match a certain profile, and it's on a mission to gather those, because maybe they mined it all out on Earth and it only exists in space. So there's this secondary directive, like when you find this resource, you go after it no matter what, kind of a thing. And
especially if that resource was programmed in beyond Callie's understanding,
like, right, or knowledge.
If the company that's making the Toby bots are like, have an ulterior motive of saying, like, we're looking for this resource, you get that resource first and then deliver it back to us, then any system would probably hijack itself.
Yeah, and maybe the resource wasn't actually on the rocket that had the supply vessel, but it was the thing that it crashed into had it. And so the robots, like, it starts as like one robot, sensors pick it up and start drilling in to get a verification, and then the other robots. And as Callie's trying to safely extract it, she's losing more and more robots to this declarative assertion that its previous programming had in it. And Callie kind of, maybe, I mean, I could see her trying to do stop at nothing to stop the robots from destroying the first ship or dissecting the first ship so that she can have the raw resources she needs to keep surviving in space. And maybe she triggers some AI subroutine that allows Toby to start learning, right? And gain some humanity of its own in the process. So, like, it's the thing
Toby
that causes
the swarm.
Yeah, Toby the swarm causes it to have some sort of singularity snap and become sentient, right? More than beyond its programming.
I want to explore that even more then, because what if then, say, another part of the programming, and maybe the company didn't put this in, but if they're sourcing these robots, if they're sourcing the robots, maybe Callie is part of the team. Maybe she's a programmer too. And maybe she's built plugins to help the bots function for more of what they need, right?
Sure.
And what if one of the plugin protocols say, like, if you see a life form in danger, you protect it first. And so what if, like, this plugin that she's made and the original programming
conflict? Yeah, and so the Toby bots are now there stuck fighting subroutines, and that's the thing that pushes it over the edge. But I want to say this happens too late, and her cargo ship gets destroyed in the process. And now she's at a critical junction, because that was, like, that had the water she needed to keep surviving, to keep the heat temperatures in check and whatnot, and now she's in jeopardy. And the robots realize that that was a needed resource to preserve life. And so I want to say there's this snap, right? We're in a dilemma and the robot needs to make a decision. Does it save?
I want it to be a single robot, like out of the swarm. Like maybe
like
something happens that, like, they're all experiencing this swarm brain fart, for lack of a better term, because it doesn't know what part of the algorithm to follow. And it would be kind of cool if, like, something in that moment happens that breaks one of the robots disconnected from the swarm, and suddenly it doesn't have the mass brain power to fight itself. And then maybe it just decides that the newer code is more important, you know, preserve life first.
Right.
And so suddenly, like, there's a single robot that's on her side now against an entire mass of robots who decide that the original code is better, because swarm mentality says that older and stronger is better, right?
Sure. No, I could see that. I think what gravitates towards me is that the single robot, it having become unplugged from the swarm, right? Still, mm-hmm. every robot has a copy of the whole programming.
Yeah.
Right. Because they need to work together. And but consciousness is more or less shared amongst all of the sensors. And that's how they build a map. And so having lost all of that noise that the swarm was producing, the robot could probably think more clearly about the its last snapshot of mm-hmm. what was going on. Like, oh, there's water on this craft. There's that needed resource on this one. Callie is my controller. She's the only human left up here in this quadrant or in the space station. Mm-hmm. Without her, we can't get repaired. You know, we can't be directed to do things. And so it decides to go after the water, but it realizes it can't do that on its own. And so mm-hmm. I would love to see this robot go through a couple of like gymnastics, like mentally here, where it's like, I need to hack the other robots. And so it, with Callie's help, like it signals Callie, like she's got an interface in front of her and the robot chimes in like text wise. I don't know, like come up with a story mechanic. I don't really care. But the robot communicates to Callie like, we're in trouble.
Wait, what if the robot doesn't communicate, like doesn't necessarily understand human communication? Or English.
Okay.
But what if the robot is able to send Callie command relays where it's okay. like instead of saying like we're in trouble, but it says like it sends her the what to do in a disaster.
The checklist.
Yeah. And so it's like sending her like command prompts and she can like see them like popping up on her screen. And yeah. so she knows like this robot is trying to say like, this is the part of my program that is being called forward. Like,
sure.
We got to do something about this.
Interesting.
And I could see also, I think the swarm probably abandoned them. The swarm like went off, like it, like he was severed. We keep
genderizing the robot.
Was severed. And all the other robots were like, okay, good. We made our decision. We're going for the resources.
Right.
And so they take off. And so it's just her, this one little bot. And this bot probably like pokes her or like, not pokes her, but like has a little claw that comes out, like pointing at her. And then like one that's like pointing at the water in the like.
Yeah. Well, I can imagine Callie at this point is stunned. She's sitting there. She's floating in space. I mean, she is tethered to her spacecraft, but to control these robots properly, she actually has to EVA out to get a clear picture from her own visual ocular implants, right? Her eyeballs.
what did we say earlier? We're chemical robots.
We're chemical robots. So these are ocular implants, right? Right. And she's stunned. Her robots just left her, right? She doesn't have the ability now to get the resource dump easily. And so the rest of the story now becomes, I mean, like the robots like fly off, right? So it's just her for the rest of the story, just her and her single robot. And she's now, you know, faced with trying to clean up all of space, but with the limited resources that she has.
Mm-hmm. Well, and at this point it is survival. Like this, this is a survival story.
Right. And not a horror story. I don't want to go down horror, but this is more of a hope for humanity story. Where through small, like crazy simple things, like you can actually do really huge things and accomplish a lot. So I'd love if, for this story, I mean, like to overcome it, the challenges, I want to see the robot helps modify their spaceship, maybe give it some grapple arms that it didn't have before. And so with their help, they and the limited resources they had, maybe they had 7 days of water left. And they come up with this crazy plan, bouncing ideas back and forth. And I'd love like not just checklists, but maybe like the robot can communicate in like visually, like through its sensors. Like this is what I'm seeing. Here's an image of what I see is our goal, and it can outline and map and it help kind of express itself that way.
And what if they discover then that the only way to get the swarm back is to one by one sever the hive mind mentality between each of them? And they all just become their own individual robot and they have to learn how to work together without being able to share their mind together.
That's interesting. I mean, that's definitely Borg-like, right?
Oh, sure, sure.
Where severing the individual from the collective helps them. But I do like that here because like then each little robot then becomes sentient and works, has to learn how to work together.
Well, and you know, the first little robot's like... make your own decision, dude. Like, like you got to do it. And so I could see like each one having a slightly different personality. You know, one's a little bit more excited. He's like, I found the water. And the other one's like, I got some trash. Like, you know, like little things here and there.
Right. And it all plays off of like the, I can't believe I'm still up in space mentality that Callie has.
Mm.
Like she can't wait to get back to Earth or whatnot. But maybe through all of this, she learns that space actually isn't all that bad when you actually have someone to chat with. And she,
even if it's just a bunch of robots that are very confused, robots. They're like little children.
Right. And now she has a herd of robots. I'd loved it to be the thing that like Callie, she's a programmer, and Toby, the first robot, they come up with a virus that they send out to these other robots, but it's a slow working one. Like they couldn't make it work. So like slowly over time, more of these bots get disconnected and come her way.
Yeah.
Something. I don't know. In the end, I think she cleans up space and everyone's
happy. Well, at least her little quarter of it, because space is a lot.
Space is large, right?
But maybe she sets the precedence of actually running that type of operation.
Right?
And making it possible with Toby.
I wonder, though, like at this point, is AI banned? I mean, because this is several, you know, years in the future, 100 years in the future, maybe. Like, is there a reason? I mean, I don't want to throw in another, you know, monkey wrench here, but a part of me nags like that this can't be the whole of the story, and like maybe maybe AI was outlawed, and this algorithmic fighting that the robots were doing internally was triggering some old code. Maybe these robots are actually, you know, like the code, like one generation to another, the code was never fully written
adapted
out,
and over time.
Right. And there was some original AI in there that was general purpose AI that was the thing that helped split the original robot.
Sure.
But they happen to be very effective.
Anyway. Or, I mean, it maybe outside of that, maybe say AI does still exist. What if AI really functions more on the hive mind side of things and each robot wasn't equipped with their own individual AI? They're just their fingers and arms as part of a larger AI
that only exists collectively.
Yeah.
And that was a safeguard to make sure, maybe that was actually a byproduct of the safeguard so that AI couldn't work on an individualistic scale. I don't know. Like, there's so many nuances that you could really explore here. And I think a lot of the fun will actually be developing Toby as a character and having him discover new things, a lot like Johnny Five.
If we want to climb into the concept of like, okay, what's really going on inside of Toby? Mm-hmm. When he separated, what if his RAM circulating part of that remnant AI file, the command file, and it just is able to build now its own algorithm that's very basic. You know, it only had part of that AI that's feeding into it. And so now it's just like relay, trying to rebuild a consciousness out of not having
one. Having gotten disconnected.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, maybe it was actually triggered because of a failsafe. Like, his communications were overloaded and disrupted, and it triggered some of these subroutines that happened in the background. And so they build up and cause his personality to develop. Interesting.
Yeah.
A lot of fun aspects that you can take in this story.
Mm-hmm. I just love the idea of, like, you know, this woman and her single robot lost in space. Not based off of Lost in Space, of course, but
which has a robot.
It does, actually. But, you know, just being stranded. Okay, that's what I meant to say. Just this idea of this woman stranded in space with a single robot who's trying to help her because it knows that it's supposed to. And just the way that they're able to salvage and put everything back together and actually complete their mission while surviving this sudden herd mentality. Like, the whole thing, I think, is a very cool story.
Yeah, indeed. Well, thank you, Stephen, for joining me on this robotic adventure.
Thank you for having me.
Stranded in space. You're welcome. If you'd like to follow us, you can at Creators PB Pod on Twitter. And you can search for us on Facebook using the search phrase Creators Playbook. Please post comments and we'll try and respond and have lots of fun creating new stories together.
Absolutely.
Can't wait to see what you guys create.
You guys are awesome. Go make some robots. Explore humanity through the eyes of something that isn't human.
And just remember, this is all a simulation.
It's all a simulation at the end of the day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Creators Playbook is a Talea Studios production. If you'd like to contact us, you can email us at contact@creatorsplaybook.com. Thank you so much for joining us. We cannot wait to see what you make.
But I mean, if you're Boston Dynamics and you have millions of dollars, you can... Whoa, that's a balancing robot?
Right?
That's a huge butt. It's got to be like the battery pack of that. We're going to have to link this video in the description.
Yeah, we can totally link this video, but it is so much fun to watch.
I mean, we're building a story here on the fly.
Mm-hmm. That's what this podcast is about.
Woohoo.